Hey, this is Charlene Bowden with It's Just Us Productions, and you're listening to the Core Confidence Life Podcast with host and my friend, Dennis R. Sumlin.
Welcome to the Core Confidence Life Podcast. I am your host, Dennis, broadcasting to you right here in New York City. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Facebook, Dennis R. Sumlin. That's where a lot of the action happens now. Friend me up. We sometimes do live interviews there. We sometimes talk about what's upcoming in the events column here at Core Confidence Life. So, yeah, hit us up there, too. We also have our Facebook like page for the Core Confidence Life podcast. Twitter, YouTube, you know the deal. That's right. Everyone probably has it. Social media, you know the dealio. Okay, so on this interview, we have a man coming on the program talking about his personal life journey through personal development, how he used poetry, writing, and hip-hop influences as personal development tools to get him through hard times and to show him the way to early manhood. And so he'll be with us in a moment telling us about his journey. He is a poet himself as well as a podcaster. And that actually goes great with my tip of the day for everybody, for your personal growth. It's always amazed me that people are very resistant, especially men, are very resistant to keeping a journal, like kind of writing things down in a journal kind of a way, just to kind of clear your mind. It's amazing how resistant people are to that. And I was too. And I've been trying to figure out what is it that people are resisting when they're resisting writing things down. And what it is that I think this would go for me as many other people as well. It's fear, because the purpose of writing things down in a journal is so you can clear your mind. If you have any issues you want to really get off your chest and there's really no one to say it to, or it would be non-productive to say it out loud, you write it in your journal. When you need to work out something in your head, get it out on paper. Because when you write stuff down, it helps you analyze it and sort through it better. It makes it more clear for you to sift through, and it helps you further along, solve all those murky issues that are rolling around in your head. And so I'm thinking, well, people don't want to write things down because that means they have to actually think through these issues. That could be sometimes painful. But I invite you to look that pain in the eye, look that fear in the eye, look that reluctance in the eye, and keep a journal to write things down with. It's great personal therapy. It helps with personal growth. It helps clear up the unsureties and gray matter going on bouncing around in your head. So on top of drinking water, like we talked about on the last show, write things down, right? So if you're working through an issue, write it down. It'll do you a world of good. And speaking of writing things down, our guest Jason Brown has taken that to a whole new level. So we're going to be turning to Jason Brown, his poetry, his hip-hop influences, and his growth into young manhood right after this.
Hi, I'm Charlene Bowden, host of the It's Just Us radio show, president and founder of It's Just Us Productions. It's Just Us Productions is a cross-media company that produces radio and TV programs that are heard and seen by national and international audiences. Visit our website at ijuproductions.com, follow us on social media, and tune in on the first and third Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the It's Just Us radio show on the Artists First Radio Network.
What up, Jason?
Good evening. What is going on, Dennis?
What is up with you? Glad that you are here on the program with us.
Appreciate you, good sir.
Absolutely. So before we skinny dip into our topic today, just give everyone an idea on who you are as a person. Where do you come from? You know, who are you? What do you do for a living? All that stuff to familiarize people who are watching this.
Cool, cool. So my name is Jason Brown. I usually go by Dark Matter on stage, or I guess in written word. I'm originally born in South Philadelphia, and then I grew up in Virginia Beach, and I'd say that my DNA is about 50% both. You know, we went to Philly for most of the summers growing up as a kid, so spending the summer there kind of just kept me close to a city environment, and there's just a part of me that there's a part of the city that's never left me. So between the two, I kind of forge, I guess, my writing style and a lot of how I look at life. Currently, I'm a bike mechanic at a local bike store. So bicycles have changed my life in a way that I never thought possible. You know, it was barely a hobby as a kid growing up. And now it's, for lack of better words, poetry in motion. And I get to share that with people on a daily basis. And like, you know, basically I've seen the bicycle do everything from, you know, turn people to pro athletes to people who can't walk more than 10 feet, ride for miles on end with no pain. So it's a really beautiful thing to be a part of. Outside of that, I read a lot of comic books. I try to read as much as I can, mostly comic books. I bounce back and forth between like comic books and poetry and autobiographies, kind of anything I can get my hands on. I love to learn. And that's about most of what you need to know about me.
Oh, all right. So you're into bikes. All right. So when did you lose your training wheels as a kid riding a bike?
Man, I don't even know if I had any, to be honest with you. I'm sure I did when I was like super young, but I didn't learn until way later in life. It was actually, I was probably 12, 13, and my friends were already riding around, so I had to figure out the hard way.
Wow, lots of bumps and bruises, right?
Yeah. A lot of blood.
A lot of blood. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so you mentioned poetry, and you've been doing poetry since you've been a child. So how did you first get into poetry itself? What got you interested in writing, and when did you start?
Sure. So I probably started around 10 years old, and I was watching TV with my mom. I want to say Oprah. I might be wrong, but that's the first thing that comes to my mind. And somebody was talking about a coping mechanism. They would write angry letters. So if they were upset about something, they'd write an angry letter and then ball it up and throw it in the trash just so they can get the emotion out of them. Okay. So I started doing that. You know, when you're 10, you're trying to ask questions, nobody wants to answer them, you're not grown enough, you know, that kind of thing. So I started, you know, writing letters about things I didn't understand. And every once in a while, I was a, you know, huge fan of hip hop. So I would try to make stuff rhyme, not for meter or anything. I just wanted to see if I could do it. And then in probably seventh grade, I learned about Maya Angelou. Once I read her work and about her life, it pretty much skyrocketed from there. And I was like, I thought to myself, I can do this. You know, I've been doing this to some measure, and I really want to pursue this. This is extremely cathartic and really helps me deal with life.
Mm. All right. So that's really, really cool. So just some of your first poetry when you was just a child.
Yeah.
What give us an idea on what type of topics were in your mind. What didn't you understand at that time that you wrote about?
Oh, why couldn't I drive? You know, when you're a kid and you're stuck, you don't have anywhere to go except where your 2 feet can take you. It's, you know, why can't I drive? Why can't I ask questions? Why can't I get the answers to questions? You know, at that point, 10, 11, you start to try to ask, you know, pretty deeper questions than you would as a young child. So just trying to figure out how the world worked. I feel like between elementary and middle school, you just kind of get catapulted into a whole new world. Like, you know, kids are cussing. So it's like, what is that? You know, and just I've always been a deep thinker. So I feel like even as a kid, I processed stuff slowly and internally and just thought deeply a lot. And it was just a way to synthesize that. So it wasn't all just running around in my head.
Hmm. So you were inspired or partly at least by hip hop to start writing. Were there any other inspirations of yours to begin writing?
Yeah, so my mom always kept my mom's an avid reader, so she kept a lot of a wide variety of books around the house. And so I remember, ironically, Maya Angelou, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. I remember the exact cabinet that it was in for pretty much my entire childhood. And I don't even know how it ended up there, but I just kept flipping past it to get to condiments or whatever. And like, why is this here? And then it turns out later that she would be my favorite poet. So it started with my mom, between her avid reading. And also we would watch TV together. And anytime I didn't know a word, you know, we'd be watching TV and I'd be like, what does cacophony mean? And she'd say, I don't know, look it up. And that really just started a love for words in general. And really trying to figure out what they mean and fit them together when I'm writing poetry.
So, you know, you sound like you have something a little in common with me about being able to be articulate earlier in life, just from different things. You were into poetry, you would ask questions, and your mammy would tell you, I'll go look it up.
Yeah.
You know? And with me, I listen to a lot of talk radio. I used to try to make friends with adults as a kid. I watched a lot of news. And, you know, I learned how to be articulate and know the meaning of words by context, doing it that way. So always good early education to deal with words and conversation and deep writing. So that's great stuff. So how did this progress earlier as you went along life? At what point did your poetry start taking on, you know, a different style and move from being a kid's writing to more of an adult writing?
Sure. That's a great question. Like I said, it started out, it was super personal. And every once in a while, I would leave a journal and somebody would try to read it. And of course, I would try to fight them because nothing worse.
You can't be reading my journal. Don't be reading my journal.
That's absolutely right. And so I'd say through middle school is kind of when I caught the bug. And then in high school, I actually used rap to do a lot of like personal projects. So someone would say, you know, here's third century mathematicians, do a poster or write a song or make a video. And I would rap most of the time. So I wrote a rap about Macbeth. I wrote a rap about Spartans. I wrote a rap about arithmetic. And they would usually go over pretty well, you know, because it's one thing to just do a poster and say, you know, Aristotle was born at this date, died at this date, and they lived, and, you know, Wikipedia, basically. Whereas I would actually sit down and, you know, like, write pretty extensive raps. And then I joined my first poetry slam competition my senior year in high school. And as I was going up, you didn't necessarily have to do anything that was written, like, that you wrote on your own. You could do other people's poems as long as you recited them, you know, perfectly. You couldn't read. So I was doing my poem, and no lie, I had spent probably a month trying to memorize it. I got on stage, I got 4 or 5 lines in, and completely blanked. Completely blanked. So I remember the point where I realized I don't remember my poem anymore. So then I just started to freestyle. Okay, I'm looking at the crowd, I'm engaging with people, and they're kind of they're receiving it very well, and I'm kind of slowing down the recital, and because I'm playing for words. I'm like looking, you know, I would like say a word that rhymes, like fish for the next one. Like, how can I make this work? And so I'm thinking I did horrible. They do the grading, the scoring at the end. I tie with somebody for third place. One of the judges there, most of the judges were our fellow student body. One of the judges was a published poet. She literally grabbed me by the arm on the way out and said, that was amazing. There's no reason you shouldn't have got first place. Don't ever stop writing poetry.
Mm. Don't ever stop.
Yes, exactly.
And you listened, didn't you?
Yeah, I absolutely did. I really wish I remember her name so I could send her a book. I'm going to figure out eventually. But yeah, she told me right then and there, don't stop. And I haven't.
That's right. Don't stop or else you're going to get an ass whooping. All right. You're cracking with. So now you mentioned that we're going to be talking about soon how poetry helped you overall in challenges. But just let's get a little deep here. What were and are some of the deeper challenges you had around life, dealing with life, life as a man, life as a person? Whatever. What are some of the challenges that you have faced and faced?
Sure. So the biggest one was when my parents split, because it wasn't a quick break. It was a slow fissure into eventual divorce. So being at an age that I was, young enough to still see my family structure, but old enough to know that it was falling apart, was really, really tough for me. And poetry was an outlet because I'm naturally a non-confrontational person, and that wasn't my place. You know, so writing about how I felt really helped me ground myself, because my parents, for the most part, they didn't like to fight. They didn't argue. They're old school. They don't really fight in front of us. They tried to make it a point to keep that kind of stuff to themselves. And sometimes it just spilled out. And I have a younger brother. So, you know, he was still young enough that I kind of wanted him to understand that what was happening wasn't a coincidence. And I was trying to help him through it. So, you know, I'm looking up at my mom, who is frustrated, and now the man of our house is now gone, and I'm looking down at my brother and trying to, you know, be the support system for him. And so that really shaped a lot of my poetry for a long time. I mean, I had to basically learn what being a man means from people that weren't my father. Now, I mean that to say he's back in my life, and he always, you know, fought for us, but there was definitely a point, you know, between 11 and probably 16, 17, that it was really rocky. And I had role models around me in the forms of, you know, uncles. I had teachers. I had, you know, people around me that I like really, you know, grew to look up to. And so I kind of learned in their role. And actually my mom, you know, showed me as much as she could about being in touch with, you know, how sensitive I was. And that duality has helped me probably more so than almost anything else. Just learning to be a man when you need to be, and learning to be sensitive and open when you need to be, and being man enough to admit, you know, when you're wrong, but at least having the heart to keep trying. You know, I'm definitely not perfect, but I can, you know, rest my head most nights because I tried to do the best that I could.
So how difficult is that? Like you mentioned, you know, being a man and then knowing when to be sensitive and that you're a sensitive person. So was that balancing act a little difficult for you, being able to, you know, be knowing when to be sensitive and then when to keep it in check and have to stand up and take care of business? Like, what was that like balancing those two things?
Every day is a new challenge. Every day is a new challenge. There are definitely moments that I have ruined, moments in my life that I've ruined from not picking the right side of that coin. There have been moments where I've needed to be soft and I was rigid and it cost me something. There have been moments where I've needed to be rigid and was soft and it's wasted a lot of time or wasted a lot of energy. And so I'm going to be dealing with this until my last breath, but every day is different. And I just try absolutely as hard as I can to be receptive to those things. And it's kind of learning to be a little bit reactive, mostly proactive, but a little reactive, engage kind of what's coming at you. So if for instance, you know, working, if somebody comes at me and they walk in the door upset, you know, I could tell in their body language, they're walking hard or their hands are clenched, then I know there needs to be a point that I need to be receptive of that. You know, and it's more of, I would say it takes more to be a man to accept that instead of just stonewalling them and saying, well, this is as far as we're getting. Now, if somebody tries to take advantage of you, obviously that's a different case. You kind of have to stand your ground and be firm. But every day is different, and I try to think that I'm doing the best I can.
All right. So there's a challenge for you, too. So before we... I have a few more questions, but just to dig more, are there any other challenges you have just either now or in the past or anything you're currently dealing with?
Yeah. So, I mean, the book that I'm working on, I had a rollout idea for books of poetry. So I published one a couple years ago and I really liked how it went. And so I kind of wanted to do a follow-up in that style, but 2020 has been so emotionally draining that a new project kind of creeped its way from my subconscious into my frontal lobe, and I've been kind of running at that. So just dealing with the immense amount of loss. I mean, you're talking about in the Black community, just how many people have died this year on and police brutality that's gone unchecked. And the celebrities we've lost, I've lost people close to me. It's been hard, and poetry is one of the ways that I can really just feel everything, anger, rage, happiness, frustration, joy, and just put it all on a page. So hopefully by the end of the year, I'll have a compilation of that, so you'll be able to read more about it. I'll definitely send you a copy.
Oh, all right. So as far as poetry helping you through these things, helping you through your parents' separation and then your balance between being aggressive and kind of receptive, so what kind of poetry has helped you balance those things out? Any examples you have, or any particular writer that has helped you?
Sure. So Maya Angelou, like I mentioned before, has been a big part of that. She lived a pretty wild life. And so hearing that level of rawness in her poetry, in direct comparison to her actual lived experiences, was pretty eye-opening. Because, you know, when you become an artist, people grow a perception of you. And I think that in, I guess, most mainstream media, that's why when you see, you know, scandals or so-and-so is doing this or wearing that or talking about this, it's such a big deal, because that disassociation or that dehumanization grows with any sort of status, right? And I think that is interesting to me. So even, you know, like musicians, you know, specifically rappers, because I grew up in the same kind of environment. And so hearing about things that I've lived through or seen or come from a similar environment, and them being able to synthesize all the things they feel into rhythm and word. So the first early influences for me were Talib Kweli and Mos Def. Hearing about them growing up in Brooklyn, and them being extremely tapped into what was going on, not only in their neighborhood, but what was going on around the world, was kind of the big unlock for me. I've been reading a lot of Rumi lately, and Khalil Gibran. Pablo Neruda is also a huge influence on me. I read some Toni Morrison recently, and it's starting to hit even more so. My fiance and I went to see a play, like a live play of The Bluest Eye, and that was easily one of the best things, pieces of moving art that I've ever seen in my entire life. So I've been kind of digging around lately, but Maya, Rumi, there's a philosopher named Osho. Anytime I read any of his work, I feel pretty inspired. Bruce Lee actually wrote a ton. I didn't know that. And the more I read about his philosophy on how to deal with life, he dealt with a lot of adversity, a lot of racism. And so, you know, seeing how he moved through that and navigated and wrote it all down was a big unlock.
All right. So you've been writing poetry for a long time yourself. You talked about your book and everything that may be coming out a little later. So what would you say was your best poem, or a poem that when you wrote it, it kind of transformed you, anything like that?
Sure. So I can dig through my phone real quick while I'm talking to see if I can find it. But I wrote a poem called Fangs, and I wrote it as a, because I have what I like to call stage pieces and page pieces. So I have some that work better on paper and some that kind of work better when spoken live on stage. And Fangs was a really personal one for me, because I didn't have dental coverage growing up. It just, braces were too expensive. So I have some teeth that grew in, my canines grew in over my baby teeth. So it just kind of looks like I've had fangs. And it's something that I never talked about. I would even try not to smile as a kid because I got teased about it. It was a very easy target. And I was actually hanging out with a friend of mine, and a couple of her nieces and nephews were hanging out, and one of them hit me with a really good joke, and I started laughing. I mean, mouth wide open laughing. And she says, "That's really cool. You have fangs." And at first it kind of just, I went into my shell thinking, oh God, you know, here's this, here it comes. And then she was like, no, like your teeth are really cool. And it was it seemed like such a small thing in the moment. And I remember going home pretty much immediately that day and just writing about it. Like, I never talked about it, never wanted to address it. And I went and I wrote a poem called Fangs, and I recited it live. And I thought, no one has to know what this is. Like, no one has to know what this is like. Everyone I've ever grown up with has had immaculate teeth, or they had crooked teeth and they got braces. And I tell you, every week after I would go back, somebody else would say, you know, I'd be scrolling through my phone like, oh, what am I going to do on stage? And someone would say, hey, can you do Fangs? My friend came in from out of town because I told him you have to come see this.
All right. So what you thought was embarrassing, was a weakness, was an issue you wasn't touching because there was a lot of embarrassment and fear around it, turned out to be something that people really just, hey, it's cool, or they didn't care, or and you made it more in your head than what it was in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, that's good. So you mentioned reading a poem, whether it's that one or anything else. So do you have something for us right here on the spot, or do I should I let you off the hook?
No, I got to find something. I had one, and then I tried to look for Fangs, but I'm scrolling through my phone right now. I'm sure I can find something for you.
Well, it's going to be so. It doesn't have to be Fangs.
Okay, cool. Let me see. Oh, my goodness. Because I've written, like I said, I'm 27 now. And I've written since I was 10, so there's a lot of
there is.
Yeah. Actually, here's one. I haven't read this one in a while. This is kind of perfect because it's just in line with the kind of poetry I wrote when I was young and my parents were kind of starting to separate. It doesn't have a title. When love was a duffel bag slung over Dad's shoulder, as he stepped out of the threshold for the last time, I witnessed an immense flame kindle, desperately crying out for oxygen. I'd hope I'd never see eyes like mine the moment I had to redefine what love was, to know what it meant to stand tall with the ambitions. If your loved ones before yourself is all in that little inferno that I've reclaimed, that pours out through my eyes, through my pen, through the paper, through worry, that will help me melt the uncertainty in your heart. I hope that I can be as big for you as my father once was.
Just let that sit there.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So what are your plans for poetry in the future? Have you performed? I know you have a podcast. We'll get to that in a second. But have you done these things live since the last time you was live with this on stage? When was that? Or do you plan to do more of that in the future?
Absolutely. So I have probably been performing on stages for a couple years now. And I actually, right before COVID kind of locked the planet down, I actually hosted my first ever open mic. So that was extremely exciting. I had a few friends of mine that came down and at first when we made the Facebook ad for it, it was at a coffee shop I was working at. So I had the venue, I had the support from my staff, and everybody was on board. And the closer it got to the date, the more encouraged we all got. But like most Facebook invitations go, everyone says, you know, interested, but, you know, going is usually pretty low. So we didn't expect much as far as attendance. And it was packed. So I'm definitely going to, you know, once things start opening up again, I'm definitely going to be back on stage. The space that I haven't been using to go out and perform, I've been using to write. So like I said, I should have a second book out, darkmatter.com, DarkMTR. You could follow the blog there, and I'm working on a landing page. I have it on Amazon. I just have to tie it all together. But yeah, so, and I'm going to be hopefully posting more actual videos on my YouTube channel. So you could follow that at Dark Matter on YouTube, and you can check them out there as well. There's a few videos already on there. So if you want to see me recite some ill poems, you can definitely check me out on YouTube.
All right. Well, since we already on the topic of you on YouTube and so forth, well, how can people hear your podcast?
Sure. So my podcast right now is streamlined through anchor.fm. It's the Dark Matter Podcast. So that's DarkMTR. search the Dark Matter podcast. You have to say the whole thing. It's like A Pimp Named Slickback. And you'll be able to find it there. It's also across all other podcast mediums. So you can definitely find me on Apple Podcasts if you have Apple as well. And I just recently started doing video. So I have the audio form, which you can go back for a couple years, but the video I just started doing a couple weeks ago. So a regular video. I want to, for the rest of the time I do the podcast, put a video out as well. So the latest video is about a week and a half old. Check that out on YouTube or listen to it on anchor.fm or wherever podcasts are found.
Or wherever you find your podcasts. So a few more questions here. So with all the poetry background that you have, both with other people's material and your own, give me at least two or three solid values that you've gotten from poetry that you live by today. The two or three values, lessons, skills, coping mechanisms. If you can maybe, if you have two or three of them in mind, what are some of them? So maybe people can maybe pick up a couple tricks from you.
Sure. These are all awesome questions. Thank you so much, Dennis.
You're welcome.
So I'd say the first one is self-acceptance. There are definitely things that I believe I am not good at, and I probably won't be good at for a very long time because the universe has a way of showing everyone lessons. Now, the difference is the lesson might be teaching you something outside of your natural wheelhouse, but it has been a wonderful journey of mine to be able to read, because sometimes you think something in your head over and over and over again, it becomes cyclical, and you say it out loud and it just shines a light on it. So poetry sometimes does that for me as well. So whether it be something that I'm not good at or something that I am good at, or a situation that I may not know how to get out of, I can at least write about it and accept myself for who I am at that day with the information I had. And it gives me something to look back on. So growth is obviously not linear, but it's pretty eye-opening to look at something from a journal from, you know, a year ago and see what the worst thing in the world was to me a year ago and say, oh, well, at least I'm doing better. You know, it's not the same necessarily the same issue, or it might be. And then it's like, okay, well, maybe we need to adjust the way we look at life, because obviously we're still dealing with this and we need to find a different way to approach this. So self-acceptance and tact. I personally don't like to use too much profanity in my poetry unless it proves a point. Like, unless it drives something absolutely home that no other word can. But for the most part, I try not to use profanity. I try not to use regular idioms. So whenever I see something that sounds like something you would hear over and over again, I like to flip them on its head. So I'm trying to think of an idiom off the top of my head. But, you know, anything that sounds cliche, I tried to take, I sometimes will literally make an example out of a cliche. I'll take a cliche and try to flip the words around or find the root of one of the words and like build a whole rhyme scheme around that. So that's another thing that I really like to do. So I guess the third is creativity, you know, literally just taking things that you would normally just hear in regular vocabulary or in a normal lexicon and take them and just absolutely turn them on its head and use it for creative measure.
Oh, so self-acceptance, tact, and creativity. So I guess in your poems, you don't say ass.
Unless I have to.
Unless you have to. Do you say tits? I guess you don't do it unless you have to.
Unless I have to.
Unless you have to. I guess I'm not very tactful. I'm even unsure what you could say on YouTube, or else I would have said it already. Because on my audio podcast, I say whatever the boop I want. I don't know what you can say on YouTube. I don't know what you can't. But yeah, my poetry would be quite interesting if I ever wrote it.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you, for your ass. Right? What issues do you think are important for men to understand?
Yeah. God, these are all great questions, man. I think it's important for men to know that being the man, air quotes, doesn't necessarily mean being rigid at all times. I have spoken to men much older than me, younger than me, single men, multiple married, you know, married multiple times, and the thread that seems to weave through them all is this idea that we need to be hard or upstanding or rigid or stoic at all times. And that is absolutely insane. That's just, there's no way you can just go through your whole life and be a brick wall. Sometimes you have to be a gate with your door swung wide open. And poetry has taught me that more than anything. Or I'd say maybe about as much as my mother's teachings, but poetry has really helped me turn that into something that I can share in a realistic context. You know, I've heard men have come up to me and said, man, like the way you talk about your feelings just as openly as you do is outstanding, because it's just always, you know, I can't like flowers, or I can't like, chick flicks, or I can't like, anything that pulls any emotions outside of, I gotta be hard, I gotta listen to gangster rap, I gotta talk about, you know, all the money I make, I have to talk about my accolades, or, you know, anything to that status, and that's fine, but that, trying to keep that up all day, every day for the rest of your life has driven, I've seen it, older men nuts, or made them make mistakes or make choices in their lives that they later live to regret. And I absolutely don't want to do that. You know, I'm the same guy that works his face off, you know, from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep. But I will also, you know, hang out with my nieces. They've been, you know, huge in my development in that. And in the same breath, if they want to sit down and they want to, you know, paint my nails or whatever, it's like, I can be that too. And it's all a part of being a man.
You know, you're absolutely right. It is very hard for, you know, men to, I'm a little bit older than you, Jason, sir. And I can tell you that, you know, where I came from, you gotta be hard. You can't allow anything to supposedly get to you. You're tough, and you know, me being a little bit more sensitive than maybe the other dudes I was around, that impacted me too. I had to navigate my way through that. And I remember, you know, when I was starting to really start my speaking career and really start to become a coach full time, you know, it was hard for me to talk about my feelings in front of an audience when I was giving speeches. And sometimes I couldn't wait to be done. But then I remember one story where I was talking about dealing with depression as a man and some of the things I had gone through back during them days. And I couldn't wait to finish it. It was a Toastmasters group. And I couldn't wait to finish it. I couldn't wait to get the hell off the stage. Oop, I said hell. It wouldn't be good for your poem. And then after that, a dude came up to me and go, you know, I'm glad that you made that speech because I relate to it. And it was good to hear another man talk about these things openly. And so I discovered after that, that, you know, the very things that you may be scared to say to somebody is the very thing that they might actually need to hear.
Absolutely.
You know, here I am scared to talk about my depression that I had and, you know, being a sensitive little flower and how I dealt with that. And here we are, an audience full of people. And there's men out there who are quietly yearning to hear another man step up and speak that message.
Yeah, that's a huge deal.
It really is. It's real deal Holyfield. So, all right, cool. Well, Jason, do you have any tips? What's one tip you can give someone right this very second to make their life that much more better if they were to apply it?
Write every day.
You're saying that at the right time, because I've been trying to get my writing muscles up again, and I've been doing that for the past week or so, and it did exactly what I knew it would do the last time I was in my writing spree. It strengthens your mind. Strengthens your writing skills, allows your feelings to flow easier, I don't know why so many people resist it. So
yeah, it's given such a bad connotation there. I think there's the idea that you have to be poignant in everything you say, and poetry definitely has taught me that too. You don't, you can be as crass as you want to. It's yours. Yeah. Own it.
That's right. That's right. Own it. Whether you say ass in your poetry or whether you say flowers and trees, open it. All right. Well, Jason, I want to thank you for coming on the program, being in the hot seat, having a black dude with an afro ask you questions, and sharing your knowledge and experience.
Thank you so much, Dennis. I really appreciate it. These are easily some of the best questions I've ever been asked. I appreciate you and your afro.
All right. So just one last time, where can people find you in your podcast?
Absolutely. So you can find me on Spotify, on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Just Google DARKMTR podcast. So that's the Dark Matter Podcast. You can also check it out on the website, which I will soon have links for everywhere you can find me, at DARKMTR.com.
All right. Speaking of dark matter, I will soon get rid of the afro because this is what all y'all call quarantine hair. Yeah. I hate that word quarantine. I've heard enough of that word this year. Enough. Enough with that word. But yeah, it'll be gone soon.
All right. Well, cool.
And I'll write a poem about it too.
Do it.
All right. Thanks for coming on the program, sir.
If you'd like to be a guest on Core Confidence Life to share your talents, resources, or life lessons, just go to cclpodcast.com. That's cclpodcast.com and click on Be a Guest.